Good afternoon. I'll call this meeting of the Housing Finance and Policy Committee to order and note that we have a quorum present. Do I have someone that would be willing to move the previous meeting's minutes? Vice Chair Dotseth, I think, was the quick on the draw there. Any discussion to Representative Dotseth's motion? If not, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The minutes are approved. Members, the first bill we're going to move today is going to be a vehicle bill that Co-Chair Igo and I have agreed to just to send to the General Register to have at our availability. So the move for the bill will for House File 2740 to be in front of our committee and we refer to the General Register. And to make this bill in order to send, we do have to strip the appropriation components out of the bill. And so I will move the DE1 that strips the appropriation components from the bill. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion is approved. So with that, I'll renew my motion that House File 2740 as amended be re-referred to the General Register. Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The motion prevails and House File 2740 as amended is re-referred to the General Register. The next bill on the agenda is House File 2901, Representative Ray Rowers' bill. Representative Rehrauer, would you like to move your bill in front of the committee?
Yes, I would. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we will be laying this bill over today. And I understand, Representative Rehrauer, you have an A1 amendment. Would you briefly describe the A1? Representative Rehrauer, is it a technical amendment to get the bill in the shape you prefer?
Yes. I would like my support here to describe the amendment.
Mr. Helfrich Anderson.
Yes, thank you, Chair Howard and members of the committee. The amendment simply clarifies where and how the money would go. So the original bill just said services for supportive housing, and this explicitly names how kind of a one-time tax credit program would fund supportive housing through a capitalized service reserve and making that explicit in the bill.
Any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? A1 is adopted. Representative Rehrauer, two-year bill as amended.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So House File 2901 adds an eligible use to the housing tax credit, which was created in 2021 to help produce and preserve affordable housing. Currently, with the housing tax credit, folks can donate to affordable housing, including new construction, rehab of an existing building, and financing or refinancing, and they can get the tax credit of up to 85% of their contribution. This makes the state housing tax credit and contribution fund a unique tool that can incentivize private investment in Minnesota's housing, specifically affordable housing. The program has been a resounding success. This year, the full $9.9 million in available credits was fully subscribed to in record time. This proves Minnesotans across the state are eager to put their tax dollars to work solving our housing shortage. Currently, the funds are used only for brick-and-mortar costs, so gap financing, new construction, and rehab for both home ownership and rental projects. While the program does work well for traditional housing, it has a significant gap when it comes to supportive housing. This is the very housing that we need the most in order to solve homelessness. Supportive housing isn't just a roof and walls, it's a roof plus services. Right now, supportive housing operators are struggling to create or operate supportive housing because ongoing service funding is insufficient to meet residents' needs. Not all affordable housing includes supportive services. It's specifically for supportive services for the people with the highest needs, which are often going to be your lowest income folks, people who are coming out of homelessness, and people with disabilities. Supportive services can include things like case management, job training, vocational training, or referrals to things like addiction rehab or mental health counseling. This is what we know. Just a building alone is not enough for helping these folks. House File 2901 strengthens the tax credit by allowing it to fund capitalized service reserves. This is not an ongoing subsidy. It's a one-time upfront infusion of capital that sits within the building's capital stack and is a current tool used by Minnesota Housing in new developments. By allowing tax credit proceeds to seed the reserves, we create a stability fund that bridges the gap between what ongoing service contracts cover and what it actually costs to keep a building safe and supportive. We're currently facing a significant federal threat in funding for housing services. We want to maintain and grow our supportive housing. We must allow then our most flexible state tool, this tax credit, to support our most critical type of housing that we build, which is supportive housing. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to be able to turn it over to our testifiers.
Our first testifier will be Kevin Walker, Vice President of Housing Development, Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon. Chair Howard and members of the committee, as you just heard, my name is Kevin Walker. I am Vice President of Housing Development at Beacon Interfaith Housing Collaborative. Beacon is a collaborative of over 100 congregations across faith traditions and a leading developer and owner-operator of supportive housing with over 1,500 residents in Beacon homes. Supportive housing, as you heard a bit about, is our state's primary and most effective response to homelessness. Successful supportive housing requires three things: capital to build, rent subsidies, and a reliable services budget for caseworkers, front desk staff, and often security. Without all these pieces assembled, the underwriting for developers or investors typically doesn't work. New supportive housing simply won't be created. Said another way, the math doesn't math. We are grateful for the state housing tax credit, which has already helped us close critical gaps for our developments. However, with services funding often missing or partially missing, supportive housing developments are increasingly at risk of not proceeding altogether. Typically, services contracts from federal, state, and county governments cover only a portion of the services budget. Supportive housing owner-operators like Beacon must bridge gaps that average $2,000 per supportive unit per year. In this context, capitalized services reserves are an increasingly important tool for the health of supportive housing that ends homelessness and housing instability. What is a capitalized services reserve? It is a one-time, upfront investment that acts as a flexible safety net to address services gaps over time. By establishing a $1 to $2 million reserve, for instance, when a property is in development, we can move a project to closing and construction. Or typically, for a lesser amount, we could stabilize an existing development, thus saving critical supportive homes. Ultimately, the level of gap on a project is very project specific, but that's just to give you a sense of how it can operate. A capitalized services reserve today and in the foreseeable future is an essential and flexible way to position supportive housing for success. It should be an eligible use of the state housing tax credit to help create and preserve the housing Minnesotans need most. This change gives providers another tool we need to make these complex developments work and end housing instability and homelessness for our most vulnerable neighbors. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Alicia House, co-president and CEO of RS Eden. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity. As you mentioned, my name is Alicia House, and I serve as the co-CEO of RS Eden. We are a nonprofit organization providing permanent supportive housing, reentry services, and substance use and mental health treatment for hundreds of individuals and families throughout the metro. I want to be clear that my testimony today is part of a much larger conversation, one that our field has been raising for years. What we know without question is this: housing alone is not enough. The stability we see in our communities comes from the combination of housing plus supportive services. Case management, recovery support, mental health care, and connection to basic needs. But here's the challenge: our funding systems are not aligned with what we know works. The state housing tax credit is a powerful tool. It drives private investment and builds much needed housing across Minnesota, but as it stands today, it funds capital and not services. Developments are built with the expectation that services will be provided. So providers are left to piece together funding from multiple sources, often inconsistent, often insufficient. It is an ongoing challenge that directly impacts the long-term stability of the housing we are creating. Expanding resources for supportive services strengthens housing stability, improves outcomes for residents, and ultimately protects the public investment we are making. By allowing supportive services to be an eligible use of the tax credit, we begin to close that gap. We create service reserves for new developments and provide a way to stabilize existing housing, ensuring residents can remain housed and supported. This isn't just about expanding a program, it's about strengthening outcomes. I'll also urge us to think bigger. Housing and services are not separate conversations. They are one and the same. Services are not optional, and every housing investment, especially those serving our most vulnerable neighbors, should include sustainable funding for these services that make housing successful. Thank you for your time and your leadership. Thanks.
Thank you. And last, we have Amy Stetzel, Upper Midwest Director, CHS. CSH, excuse me.
Thank you.
Welcome to the committee.
Chair Howard and members of the committee, thank you so much for allowing me the opportunity to testify today. My name is Amy Stetzel, and I'm the director of the Upper Midwest Office for the Corporation for Supportive Housing. CSH is a national nonprofit that provides TA and training, systems change efforts. We're also a CDFI. And so you know the data. Minnesota communities need more housing across the entire housing spectrum. And the housing tax credit program, as you've heard over and over again, is this really innovative tool to support the development of all those different types of housing across the state. A subset of that needed housing is deeply affordable housing combined with services, which is a model we call supportive housing. And that's been proven to be the most effective intervention for those who have severe and chronic health conditions or disabilities and are experiencing homelessness. So the development of supportive housing is really contingent on three different budget streams all coming together. One of those is the capital, the bricks and mortar. The other is operating. How do we keep the lights on and the doors open? And the third is services, which is paying for kind of the secret sauce of that ongoing connection to mental health, substance use, and case management programs that allow people to heal and stabilize. Without dedicated funding for services, communities and developers struggle to serve the populations who need housing most, leaving units inaccessible for people exiting homelessness or institutions. Allowing service reserves as an eligible use of funds for the tax credit program would ensure that the state's housing investments for our hardest to serve Minnesotans are in a strong financial position from the very beginning. It would also begin to align the policy and practice necessary to develop supportive housing, specifically those three lines, the capital, operating, and service budget commitments from the very start, which is something that housing owners, developers, operators, service providers, and advocates have been advocating for, asking for years, if not decades, and is what is reflected in the recommendations that have been named in the currently draft Simplifying Supportive Housing Resources Working Group report. By allowing those service reserves as an eligible use for this tax credit program, Minnesotans can increase the long-term success of state-funded housing developments, ensure communities can really serve the populations most in need, and strengthen critical community outcomes and reduce unsheltered homelessness statewide. I urge the committee to consider supportive service reserves as an eligible use for the Minnesota Housing Tax Program, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. With that, we'll move to member discussion. Questions from members? Representative Dotson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe for our last testifier might be able to speak on that, or the author. Just curious, why are the tax credits contribution being used for services at all right now? Because isn't that something that's typically taken care of by DHS?
Representative Rayrauer or Mr. Helvick-Anderson?
Mr. Chair, what's the question? Why
are they being used for services at all? Aren't those services intended to be used for the providers that are actually needing those services for their projects?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I think I can answer, but then you may have to correct me. The main reason is that in order to get one of these projects across the finish line, you've got to show that you have each of the sources of funding that you need, including the services. So by having this reserve, showing that the services are going to be covered for a certain period of time, you can get this project across the finish line. It's different from the way it would be done through DHS, which would be on an individual basis. But I'd love if you want to add to that.
Mr. Helvick-Anderson?
Yeah. Mr. Chair and Representative Dothis. Just to name that to pay for a supportive housing development, right, is committed to providing services to the residents there for 15 to 30 years via its capital sources. To provide that, there's multiple different streams of funding to make a robust service budget, and some of those are grants and programs via DHS, exactly. Those, at this point in time, really do not cover a full, robust service budget of a building in any way, no matter how you piece them together. And so you need to put together lots of different forms of funding together. And one of the ways, and almost all providers are supplementing those different contracts with their own money. This new method of creating a service reserve, just like you create an operating reserve in a building, is a way to actually make the math work for a building, to where that gap, yearly gap, between the difference between what residents need and what DHS and other contracts from the county and such cover, that this reserve can be pulled upon to meet those needs.
Representative Dodson?
Thank you for your explanation. I'm just curious if there's any alternative options that we could look at for different bridging of those monies, because of course the intent wasn't originally for DHS funding. So I guess that we could, if we could explore other options as we move forward on this, but thank you.
Other members? Co-chair, I go.
Thank you, Co-chair Howard. Representative Rehauer, thanks for the bill in front of us today. Obviously the state tax credit is something that's having outstanding success, and we're hopefully going to see it turn away from a sunset into permanent state law. I think your idea is unique and kind of interesting, but I think at this time I'm just kind of like lukewarm to it, because we're still trying to get this program set up. We're still trying to make sure that we're getting adequate subscription to the program. So I just want to make sure we get that set up and working well and permanent in law before we make any changes. So I'm glad we're laying the bill over today, but I think it's a good conversation to start having about how we can diversify this potentially new funding stream to help with diversifying our housing. So thanks for the bill. And like I said, look forward to continue working on it.
Representative Rehauer, I'll speak quickly and then can go to you. Thank you for bringing the bill forward and this idea. We've had a lot of conversations already in this committee and moved bills out that recognize the importance of supportive housing. And what's clear is the funding pressures and challenges, even before what the federal government did, were present. And so it makes sense to be trying to figure out ways that we're ensuring our supportive housing providers are stable. My main takeaway from a bill like this, with the success of the tax credit, is we probably ought to be looking at growing the pie. There's so much need, and this tax credit is a tool that's working well, that businesses, individuals are providing resources into. And so, you know, as we have the conversation about expanding the uses, we also got to have the conversation about expanding the dollars that Minnesotans are using for this program. But I'll go to you, Representative Rehauer, for any final word on the bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. Thank you, everyone, for your comments. I just want to reiterate that, yes, the most successful way to move folks from longtime homelessness to permanent housing is this supportive housing, where it's not just a building or, you know, a temporary emergency shelter, but you actually have folks with the knowledge and the expertise working directly with the individuals and getting them the services that they need to get there. And that's what I think ultimately our end goal is. So yes, I love the suggestion that maybe it needs to even be expanded.
Thank you, Representative Rehauer. And with that, your bill is laid over. Next on the agenda is House File 4443, Representative Feist.
I have never been to the Housing Committee before.
Oh, look at that. All right. Thank you, Representative Feist. First time in the Housing Committee in the last bill before deadline here, so well done. I will move your bill, be brought in front of the committee. Our motion will be to lay this bill over. Representative Feist, to your bill.
Great,
Thank you so much for hearing my bill. Last year, a former U of M student brought this issue to me as something that affects thousands of college students because of a law that we passed. A law we passed in 2021 is not working as intended. In 2021, the legislature passed a bill to address the practice of short-end leases, which is a rental term. It lists rent terms as one lump sum amount for the entire lease and makes it due in 12 equal installments on the first day of every month. In reality, the last month the students pay full month of rent for only a handful of days of tenancy. This is especially a big deal for students because they live on a tight budget, they lack sophistication, and they also have less flexibility because the leases on campuses tend to start and end at the same time each fall. In 2021, we passed legislation to require that the last month of the lease be prorated for the number of days that actually included in the lease when the lease ends partway through the month. Unfortunately, landlords just changed the leases so that the short month happens at the beginning of the lease instead of at the end. So they're doing exactly what we didn't want them to do. They just found another way to do it. Many buildings haven't actually changed anything, and they're just assuming that their tenants aren't sophisticated enough to hold them accountable. And for the most part, they're right. So this means it's more lucrative for them to just break the law rather than to comply with it. This bill does two things. First, it closes the loophole so that no matter whether the shortened month is on the beginning or end, the rule still applies. And then it also disincentivizes landlords from breaking the law by opening up pathways for students to seek recourse. And there are people here to testify. Thank you.
First on the list is William Luther, Director of State Affairs, Undergraduate Student Government at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities.
Two seats for a reason.
Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, good afternoon, chairs and members. My name is William Luther. I am the Director of State Affairs for the Undergraduate Student Government at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. I'm also a current junior at the College of Liberal Arts at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. We represent the 30,000 undergrad students at the University of Minnesota Twin Cities. A lot of the students that we serve are renters. Apart from our freshman students, a vast majority of our students turn to private companies and landlords to find on-campus or near-campus housing. A majority of students seeking private housing are first-time renters. Students often looking for housing for next year during their spring freshman semester often find that the process is convoluted, complicated, and confusing. They get a lot of advertisements from private companies, you know, offering deals and such. They have to find housing pretty quick along with studying along with being a full-time student, they also have to find housing. And so it can create a lot of complication. We're glad that we have student legal services, which helps students understand those leases. But again, having the information is different than having statute that actually protects renters. As students progress in their housing search, they often are pressured by these companies to sign leases as quickly as possible, sometimes right on the spot. They're often told that if they don't sign their lease right then and there, they won't have a spot for that student in the next year. Students are often under pressure of lack of time to find the information needed to review and make smart decisions about their lease, especially when looking out for unfair clauses like those addressed in House File 4443. The reasons why so many students fall victim to these practices is that often students only need to rent their unit for 9 months a year. They return home to work and live in their hometowns, especially if they're from greater Minnesota or out of state. They usually cannot commute from their homes to the Twin Cities campus, so a lot of times they have to find housing on our campus. The simple fact that someone is forced to pay for days or weeks of rent in a unit they cannot occupy is simply unfair. House File 4443 protects students, renters, and all renters by establishing a common sense regulation that landlords must charge rent only for the time a student or renter occupies a unit and not when the student has no access to their unit. Landlords around our campus are known for requiring students to pay a full month's rent when they move in for a couple days a month. This bill is simple and protects student renters from these predatory practices, promotes housing affordability and transparency with all renters, including the most vulnerable ones, our student renters. We urge this committee to vote yes on this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Shauna Tumanis, Senior Staff Attorney at the University of Minnesota Student Legal Services. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard and members of the committee. My name is Shana Tumanis. I'm the Senior Staff Attorney at the University of Minnesota Student Legal Service. I've also appeared before this committee as a staff attorney at Housing Justice Center, so Excited to be here today to talk a little bit about House File 4443. To close a growing loophole by landlords to circumvent the purpose of 504B.116. By way of history, our office, along with undergrad student government, came before you and requested this because of the trend that we were seeing where students were moving, were paying for a full last month's rent and being asked to leave maybe August 10th. Now what you're seeing after the passage of this is an unintended consequence where I'm having students that I review their lease and I say, okay, so that last month's rent, great, you will pay rent and you move out July 31st. Unfortunately, the first month, you're going to pay rent on August 1, 2026, and you get to move in on August 28th, 2026. So the amount that you're paying is a full month's rent for often less than 5 calendar days. This bill is meant to cover that gap, which was the purpose of the bill, was that people should pay for rent for the days in which they live there. And this would hopefully make it so that way those pieces are covered. In addition, there is a lot of language that are added to these 60-page leases that ask for arbitration. They ask for landlords to, for students signing these leases, to waive their rights that they have. So this protection piece in there helps protect and make sure that this is a meaningful piece of legislation. And on page 50, they aren't waiving their right to contest any illegal fees. I'm happy to answer any questions about this, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you. That's the last person that signed up, so we can move on to member testimony or member questions. Is there any members that have questions? Representative Dotsett.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Maybe for the testifier and the author, have you tried to reach out to maybe the landlords just to find out where there's some happy compromise, what they're ultimately trying to achieve through this process?
Representative Feist.
Yep, thank you so much. I did. We've had multiple conversations. They took this issue back to their association to have a conversation. When I followed up to see if they had any input, they said they did not have any input. Not on this, like, and so they basically had no suggestions on how to address this issue. And so I introduced this legislation, which was one of the proposals that we had discussed with them.
Representative Dotson.
That's it. Thank you.
Representative Hussein.
Thank you for bringing this bill forward. And I kind of familiar with this issue because a lot of students who used to live in my district has moved to the U of M area, and they had a horrible experience. The landlord was not responsive and was not even respecting some of the legislators when we send them emails. So that's the reason that this bill is very important for you bringing forward. Also, I have discussion with Representative Knorr, who represent also in that area. He's aware of it. It's kind of a bit frustrated, some of the landlords, but we need to hold them accountability. And sometimes I've seen some of the students that reach out to my office was like, they not even move, they make the rent payment on time and to move in, and it takes a week or two until they get into the apartment because they wouldn't provide them the keys, or this is a legal issue and this is something that need to be addressed, and our students should not worry about their, you know, like chasing landlord, but they should be able to focus in learning and become one of the best in class. So I thank you for bringing forward, and thank you for testifying. And this is should be bipartisan, and let's all vote together.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you, Chair. I just went through this. I moved apartments last month, same building, but went from one floor to another. And I went in on a middle of the month. What's going to happen? You know, how am I going to get hosed here? That's my first thought, was like, they're going to take advantage of this. And they're like, no, it's all prorated. It goes right to, so they're doing, quote, the right thing. Mm-hmm. And it went really smooth. And so when I saw this, I'm like, really? And then I started thinking about it. What if they're not? What if they're not? What's your recourse? Mm-hmm. You know, there's a contract that you sign. And in that contract, it might stipulate, for instance, the contract they wanted me to sign said, I cannot move out in December or January. And I said, well, that makes no sense. I'm a legislator. If I lose, I have to leave on December at the latest January. Well, you can't. You got to stay till the end of February. I go, no, no. Find a different renter. Oh, no, no. Maybe we can talk. So they want, and I say they, the people that have 200 plus 300 apartments can control their cash flow better by using my lifestyle. And I'm like, no, no. I'll find somewhere else if I have to. I don't want to. But what this does is it makes the playing, for me, it makes the playing field equal mm-hmm. for me. So thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Rehrauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you so much for bringing this bill forward. It's pretty clear we need to get this done. It fixes a loophole in the existing prorated rent law. And when we, you know, have a law and we realize there's a loophole that's being taken advantage of, then that's something that should be our job as legislators to do that fix. And it sounds like this is a very simple, straightforward fix. You know, if you're living for a partial month on the front end, whether it's at the beginning of the lease or the end of the lease, you should be being able to pay a prorated amount. So I just want to thank you for bringing the bill forward.
Vice Chair Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and Representative Feist, and to our students for bringing this bill forward. This is work that in my first term, we got to work with university college students and to the legal teams there on a number of issues. You know, one of the things that, in addition to trying to tackle this, that now became another hole that we had to plug, was just making sure that students get to actually view and walk through their apartments, you know, with their landlords before they sign in. We do that when you rent a car. Should do the same thing when you have an asset like an apartment. So I guess personally I'm feeling a little dismayed to hear that we made a solve and then we're back here. And I know that this is an issue that is not just for the university students in the cities, but it's something that we hear, you know, in Duluth. We have a number of colleges, and it's just something that when oftentimes, you know, you might be a first-time renter and not necessarily know what all of this means, and that can be really overwhelming. And as you were saying, like the stress of having to kind of figure it out alone. And so I was just curious if you've engaged with the college students across the state and what, if anything, you're hearing from other folks who would benefit from this.
To the one of the testifiers or Representative Feist?
I can answer, and then I think maybe my testifier as well. So I was going to close with this, but I'll just share the story now. So I spoke with a bunch of young women who were interested in going into the law. They were U of M students. And I told them about this bill, and like every single one of them, there were like 15 students there. They were like, all of us have experienced this, and we don't know what to do. And I was like, well, if you go to student legal services, every time they raise this, the landlords have said, oh, our bad. But it's like a lot of times students don't know that they can even do that. So if you wanted to also weigh in.
Absolutely. And so I serve Twin City campus students, but we also take questions from the satellite campuses such as Morris and Duluth, and we talk to other college students across the state of Minnesota. And I will say this, there is a particular market of landlords that come, they're corporate out-of-town landlords that specialize in what they call student housing. And so they buy in markets with colleges like Big Ten colleges and large college communities, and they have the same leases across all of their states. So the leases that are before you are the same leases that they use the same terms in Duluth, and they use them in Morris and other college areas. I will say that by and far, that is also a bellwether for larger things that you will see. The student apartment complexes tend to use lease terms that will then later be picked up by other marketplaces. So even if it's not seen in the greater community now, typically you will see terms like that used by other landlords in the area through attrition.
Representative Kozlowski.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Howard. And I really appreciate that contextualization, but then also just that hits on the next thing that I wanted to bring up that I like about this bill, because I'll be honest, as a college student, I'm sure I signed leases like that and had no idea as well. And one of the aspects of enforcement, what recourse do students have to go at this together and not just alone?
Representative Feist?
If you'd like to answer. Yeah, sorry. You have like on a macro level experience.
Absolutely. So when there's a violation of this chapter, there's a couple options. The first, they can do an individual, like a small claims Judge Judy style type case, which is very accessible. Our office represents students in those cases, even though you're supposed to be able to do it without an attorney. We also, thanks to the legislature, have the right to organize. That's been incredibly effective to have students be able to organize and bring all of their leases to there and say, do you want 100 small claims court cases on this particular issue? Because we know it's a clear violation of Minnesota law. That is something that students have been able to successfully go towards. And then also individual policies. So my office has a policy that when something is clear, black letter law, I can send them a letter and say, you know, this is something that is a violation of Minnesota law. You are renting to University of Minnesota students. You cannot come on campus and do our on-campus housing fairs if you have a clear violation of Minnesota law. Now, if there's not a clear violation because maybe there's a legal argument, then they still get to come on campus and we still have to deal with the individual cases. This law would help make that up crystal clear that what they are doing is in violation of Minnesota law.
Wait, anything further? Coach Rago.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thanks for the conversation today, members. I guess I'm just, I get the point of it. I guess I want to just ask, like, because we're talking unwanted side effects. Is a potential another one, though, because of this prorate and then the gaps that we're going to just see rent prices increase to make up for that anyway?
Representative Feist?
I think that's the argument that anybody could make about most of the things that we try to do here around, you know, any types of reforms. Like, oh, no, it could affect, you know, overall costs. I mean, ultimately, like, people should pay rent for the amount of days they are actually renting an apartment. And landlords should be able to create a budget around people paying them rent for the space that they provide. And that should be affordable for all of us. So I don't think, you know, if there are collateral consequences, it's because they haven't been following the law. And we should want them to follow the law that we intended in 2021 to address this issue. So this is just making sure that they're following the law as we intended it to be in 2021.
Coach Rago?
Thank you for the answer. Again, I think, you know, we're laying it over so we can keep having conversations and working on it. I don't want that side effect to be for our university students that rent goes up another $75 to make up for it now. You know, because, I mean, there's things that have to happen. As someone that was renting in college housing not that long ago, it seems, I remember how much work sometimes those units were that I was moving into, and some college kids aren't as nice to apartments as others are. So I just want to make sure that we're not going to create larger problems for ourselves down the line, but thanks for the bill. Looking forward to working on it more.
I did live in one of those dinky town apartments. I think you're talking about, Coach Rago. But Representative Feist, I want to go, before I go to you or your testifiers for any final comments, just thank you for bringing the bill forward. I remember when we took action on this in 2021, I think Representative Nash might be the only member that was there on our housing committee in 2021 that's on that side of the aisle. But we were able to sort of have a good bipartisan dialogue to get to the, and this seems just like a way, as you just stated, of making sure that the law that we pass on a bipartisan basis is being followed. And so I really appreciate you bringing forward. It feels like there's a couple instances this year when we've have issues brought to us after a bill has been enacted. We get a chance to see how it's working well, how it's not. And this helps us kind of strengthen the law in ways that are eminently fair for renters and specifically students. So thank you for bringing the bill forward. But if you had testifiers that wanted to make any final comments, and then you can have the final word.
Yeah, thank you so much. I do think one of my testifiers had something to say, and then I'll just wrap it up.
Yeah, I mean, just going to the question of if we see this beyond the Twin Cities campus, I mean, definitely I've talked to the University of Minnesota Duluth campus student government, and they are experiencing the same thing. Talked to Minnesota State student governments, they also experiencing the same thing. And so the University of Minnesota Twin Cities is just extra more impacted by this because a lot of our students, once they get over their freshman year, they usually don't go back to on-campus housing. They got to find off-campus housing. And this is usually private housing is usually where they find. And I mean, this bill is all about fairness. Students agree to pay rent for a certain amount of days as they should pay for rent for that certain amount of days, not anymore. Thank you.
Thank you.
I cannot say it better. So we'll leave it at that.
Well, thank you. Appreciate the discussion, and it sounds like bipartisan support for the bill. And with that, we will lay it over.
Thank you.
That is the last bill on the agenda. A quick word of personal privilege from the chair. Today, the state high school basketball tournament starts. The Richfield Spartans are playing for the first time in a while. They've had a great season, so I want to wish them a note of good luck. And
hopefully a little more good luck, as this is the 25th anniversary of a young, scrappy Mike Howard leading the leading the Becker Bulldogs to the state tournament. So it's been a minute or two, but hopefully that'll give a little good luck to the Raiders today. So with that, we're adjourned.